Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, it's action, drama and excitement all the way here in Belfast as we bring you the news, views and the results of sport in Northern Ireland. We start with soccer and let's go straight away to the results of the Auto Windshield Windscreen Wiper Fluid Irish League Division 1. Glentoran 0, Portadown 0, Coleraine 0, Lumavading 0, Dungannon 0, Ards 0. That match was abandoned due to no one showing up. Glenavon 0, Bangor 0, and Crusaders versus Distillery was a late kickoff. That late kickoff due to crowd congestion down at the Limavady Leisure Centre, where CIYMS were taking on NIFC in the CDP-sponsored TSB League. CIYMS just going on to shade that one by a consonant. Turning now to GAA in the interest of meaningful dialogue and progress. The scores in Division 1A, Londonderry 1 goal and 8 points. Down, no goals at all, but 11 points. Close one there. Armagh 2 goals and 6 points. Antrim 2 goals and no points. Donegal 3 goals and 3 points. Fermanagh only 2 goals and 12 points. Hard luck for Fermanagh. By our allegedly the GAA results, but we've heard this all before, so how can we be expected to believe them without any conclusive photographic evidence? One last score coming in there. Yes, it's Tyrone 10 kicks and 5 slaps and no suspensions. Dublin 12, Diggs 4 loafs and no suspensions. Well, on to hockey now, and there was certainly no shortage of breathtaking action in the intermediate under-19s Co-op Superstore Cup down at the Cookstown Leisure Centre, where Instonians took on the might of Queens in the semi-final. Well, Inst went into this semi-final knowing that they needed to win this game if they wanted to make the final. Queens, however, went into the game knowing exactly the same thing. In the end, that turned out to be the difference between the two teams. None at all. Estonians 0, Queens 0. They'll have to do it all over again next week.
Welcome to Free State, everybody. Joe is mouthing along with me as I speak. He seems to be so certain he knows what I'm going to say that he's just lip-syncing, who knows, I might say something that he doesn't expect. Joe, we're going to talk about a few things today, but it's funny, one of the things that struck me over the weekend was the death of Stan Bowles, because I know he's the type of footballer, type of personality that would have captured your kind of imagination. Like I interviewed Stan Bowles once. I've talked about that on a podcast before, but he was extraordinary because he was in that interview, he was he had an autobiography out, which is a hilarious book, a really hilarious book about just capers and London life and you know, hanging out with Phil Lynott and various things. It was nothing about football and it was all the better for that. But he was publicising his own autobiography. And when I arrived in the pub in Brentford, which is, there was a pub on every corner of the old Brentford Football Club ground where Stan finished his career. And he was waiting for me in another pub, which he called his office. But I was in the pub, which he went to where he went to unwind. So I was in the wrong. I hadn't gone to his office.
So anyway, he made his way around the pubs.
He did. He did. And so everyone was really...
You know the way a dog pees on every tree it goes past, you know? He sort of...
But
fired out of one pub, you see.
But nobody could...
Three.
Yeah. And but they couldn't... Everyone knew him in the pub and they were all baffled that he was late. It was like noon on a kind of Wednesday and nobody could understand why he was late. They were like, Stan's never late. He's never late for anything. And I figured that probably came from all his betting, you know, because you couldn't be late if you've got to get a bet on. So he showed up about half an hour late anyway. And as I said, this was to promote his own autobiography. He then asked me, would I be prepared to pay him 200 quid for the interview, which was, you know, had been set up like on his side to do it.
What year was this?
This was about 20 years ago.
200 quid.
And so we came to an arrangement on that and he did the interview and it was great. But he was like, you know, it's just one of those things when you read without falling totally into nostalgia. It's very hard when you read about Stan Bowles. Like I remember he talked about this when he did Superstars. You remember Superstars, the 1970s program where they all different sportsmen sports.
The Pat Spillane did.
Yeah, yeah. And there was the famous judo guy, Brian Jacks, who was the kind of, who was the winner of it. And it was for, you know, it was for all round sports people, like people who excelled at everything. Stan Bowles famously got the lowest score ever in Superstars. Because he went there and it was made by the BBC and he spent the entire recording session just drinking and eating at the BBC's expense. So we could barely get on the bike when it came to those races. So he was
sort of England's Georgie Best.
He was, and he was from Manchester. Lots of people thought he was kind of from London because he made his name with QPR. And he had a great time. He used to hang around all the Irish pubs, and like there's a picture of him. He took while he was waiting for a corner to be taken. Once he took a copy of the Sporting Life out of someone's hands who were on the terraces to see what time, you know, the horse he fancied was running. So there's a picture of him reading the Sporting Life as he kind of has his hand on the goalpost. But he was an amazing character. And I remember him saying to me, and this was the thing he said, I think that was, he hadn't played in 25 years or something. And he said to me at the end of it, he said, people still remember me. I haven't played in 25 years and that's amazing. And it's funny that he hasn't played in, you know, so long now and people still remember him this week.
Well, I mean, you always remember those, you know, Maradona Best, because there's something deeply human about all of them. You know, there's nothing robotic. They are the embodiment of romance and glory. I suppose all the things that that make us dream a bit. And you know, the guy who prefers to take a free kick by having it flicked up and then trying an overhead kick, to the one that sort of rehearses endlessly the same free kick over and over and over and over and over and over again. And you know, these are the unforgettable people, you know, who make a mark.
Well, the interesting thing about that this weekend, of course, as well, is that when we talk about someone like that and we talk about how sport unites, it also can divide. And we're looking at a situation with Casement Park in the North, which we want to talk about today, because it touches on a lot of bigger themes. And in some ways, the fact that it reaches those bigger themes means sometimes you might actually, there is probably a debate to be had about what is happening with the redevelopment of Casement Park for the Euros, that doesn't become part of the culture wars, but it has become part of the culture wars in the North.
It's typical of everything in the North, you know. I mean, see, this week in the newsletter, Ben Lowry, who's their editor, Belfast's extremist policy on Irish street signs is unfolding just as Republicans wanted it to unfold. This is about bilingual street signs. Belfast now has an extremist and divisive street sign policy intended to make people from a unionist background uncomfortable. And what difference is there? You know, it's described as part of a Republican culture war, he says, that has the support of people in the political centre ground and even some unionists. People who naively deny there is such a war being waged by Republicans and insist that the usage of Gaelic is harmless. And, you know, this sort of hateful rhetoric. You know, the intention is this, to Gaelicise the feel of Belfast. And this is my favourite line. And to end any sense that overseas visitors have of arriving in a classically British industrial city, distinct in feel to Dublin. Brackets, tourists often liken us to Leeds. Jesus. And this is a foretaste of where the Irish Language Act will lead and why the Ulster Unionist Party was right to oppose it. You know, it is extremist and provocative.
Are you doing your Ian Paisley impression there?
Well, because, I mean, it's nothing has changed really from that perspective. I believe that the overall Irish Republican aim is to make it possible for Gaelic activists to get signs into areas everywhere. And now the main parties are quiet, or so terrified are they of being unfairly labelled bigots. Mm. And this is a thread, you know, that we've had to put up with. I mean, this is. I mean, I see this week they've released archives of the Pole Glass protests.
What were they?
Well, that was in the late 70s. A decision was made. It had to be made by government, central government, to say, look, so many people in West Belfast are living in slums with outdoor toilets, you know, crumbling walls, you know, large families in two up, two down houses, you know. And a decision was made then to move them to a greenfield site in Pole Glass. They'd already done this with an estate in Twinbrook. And so Pole Glass, on the sort of outer outskirts of West Belfast, was announced as the location for this. And the Reverend Beattie, who was a sort of a blood and thunder loyalist, joined by Dr. Paisley, etc., they organised protests all over the north to smash this Republican scheme to build a Republican stronghold in Pole Glass. And listening to the clips from that time, you know, will be very stark on the ears of our younger listeners.
Mm. In spite of all the bluster, the first Pole Glass housing will be ready in September. It seems a defeat for the loyalists. We took this up with the leader of the anti-Pole Glass marches, the Reverend William Beattie.
Did you say in 1976, in November, Pole Glass will be stopped?
I did indeed, yes.
You were wrong, weren't you?
We have succeeded in stopping Pole Glass as a overall plan. We have not succeeded in stopping a number of houses being built. The battle goes on, and when it stops, it stops.
It must seem to some that you threatened to smash Pole Glass and use this very heavy language, but meanwhile, out there on the hillside, the houses just go on going up.
4,000 houses are not being built, and will never be built. And it's a big question now as to whether the 2,000 will be built. So the Pole Glass plan, as it was presented to us, is already well and truly cracked up, and the battle goes on.
After the Loyalists' success in getting the original Pole Glass scheme halved, they've made little headway. The government now seems determined to go ahead with its scheme to move overcrowded Catholic families from West Belfast to Pole Glass. But Mr. Beattie still believes he can break the government's resolve.
You were quoted as saying in 1978, with regard to Pole Glass, we're going to kick the stuffing out of the government. Do you think that's happened?
Yes, indeed. The government are already beginning to backtrack. For example, there will be no police station built in Pole Glass. That's already abandoned. For example, the health centre that was planned originally is now abandoned. For example, no doctor's surgeries are going to be put in pole glass. No dental surgeries are going to be put in pole glass. Right down the line, there's a whole list of things that have been abandoned, and more will be abandoned as we push the government's nose into the mess that they have made.
And very similar to, you know, what's happening in relation to Casement Park. I mean, Casement Park is an issue that is only an issue because of the sectarian nature of the North. And I don't know if you've seen the promos for a documentary that's running on BBC Four, not in the main channels, but on BBC Four next week. And the promo is headlined, "The Bloody Protestants Ran BBC in Northern Ireland," says ex-BBC One controller Paul Fox. Fox described anti-Catholic prejudice as being, quote, deeply embedded in the corporation in Northern Ireland, and said the British people were never told the truth about the Troubles because, quote, the bloody Protestants were running it. And, I mean, Paul, who's now Sir Paul, he was the controller of BBC One, and the titbits from the documentary will be interesting again for our younger listeners, you know, obviously not people like me who grew up through this, but it is interesting to see these things confirmed by facts at the time. You know, I mean, in during the Troubles, Fox was the editor of Panorama, and he said that, you know, it was impossible to tell the story of the oppression of Northern Catholics properly. In fact, it was impossible to tell it at all. And Martin Bell and Dennis Toohey are two other sort of very important BBC figures who are...
Martin Bell, who was a BBC journalist and then became
Went on to become the MP. Yeah, yeah. You know, who was sort of a crusader for integrity. And Bell said that whenever he went to the North, he said, "I hardly knew the difference between Belfast and Dublin. But on arrival at BBC Belfast, I was ordered to call Derry Londonderry and never to refer to the province as the Sixth County." He says that was, quote, Republican speak. He said, "I had the controller of BBC Northern Ireland breathing over my shoulder at all times." And Dennis, you know, but I mean, like, it is important. We've had this discussion before.
But it's funny what came into my head there, why I laughed, was I pictured, and you see that someone like Bell, who'd been all around the world, and that being a threat in the kind of insular little insular little society, protective society, that he found himself in. You know, I think that's one of those. It's just a very clear image of somebody feeling that this guy is a maverick, is a loose cannon. He could say anything here. He might even say the words six counties and all hell will break loose.
Well, I mean, he wasn't empty talk. I mean, he was beaten up by a group of loyalists, and his cameramen were beaten up by them. And that was after the Reverend Ian Paisley had called the BBC the Papist Broadcasting Corporation. The Papist Broadcasting Corporation, you know, in a way, delightfully funny. But, you know, I mean, Dennis Toohey, he was the first Catholic in any reporting or production post when he joined the BBC Northern Ireland. Right. He was the very first Catholic. And he says in the documentary, look, the grievances of the Catholic people in housing, voting rights, etc., had little or no traction. And he was moved to BBC Current Affairs in London pretty quickly because he said they were afraid that, you know, they were continually censoring his output, and they were afraid that this man was going to be telling the truth about what was going on. And he then expected to be returned to the North on a particular story. And this is what he says. "But my editor called me into his office, shut the door and said I could not now go, since BBC Northern Ireland had protested at the highest level in London about me. I was appalled. It was because I'd been a news reporter there for several years. It was because I was a Catholic. I was going to Derry on a story, not Londonderry. And the Unionists simply would not allow that to happen. And, I mean, that's where we were with it, you know. And I can go back to these apologists that we have in the South, you know, the apologists and Fine Gael and the various sort of commentators who seem to get undue prominence in the media. You know, Fox said, back then, right, when I was the managing director of BBC Television by this stage in the 70s, the only thing we could not tackle was Northern Ireland. The decision had been taken that the head of Northern Ireland programmes would act as the censor. It was more difficult to film there than in the Soviet Union. It was easier to go to America with no censorship to film their race problems than the race problems in Northern Ireland. And so, you know, that formed the backdrop to what was going on as well. And it's important to understand that when people in the South are saying, why are the DUP and the UUP and the Loyalists, why are they railing against a stadium for the GAA, which was promised, you know?
And well, are they railing? Because you say, you know, it's you link those, you know, what happened in the 70s to Casement Park, and people would, or to people talking about Irish language signs. And, you know, in some ways I can see what you're saying, but in other ways these seem to be kind of such smaller, like these aren't life and death, these aren't existential, these aren't, they are culture wars in some ways.
Yeah.
Is it not too much to say that this is a continuation of those sectarian times of the 70s, because it's not the same level
outrage. But that's only because the demographic has been transformed. You know, that's only because of the emergence of Sinn Féin. It's only because of the peace process, all of those things. Like they've had to be dragged kicking and screaming. You know, and I think that it is important the way it's presented in the North as well. I mean, Leo Varadkar was interviewed in the BBC Northern Ireland by Tara Mills. And I don't know if you saw Trevor Burney's tweet this week about the documentary that we've been discussing about how the BBC was loaded, you know, the bias, the fact that it was utterly dominated by people from the Protestant community. But Trevor Burney tweeted this week, he said, want to get the exact quote. He said, if you check, he said, you'll see that the religious makeup of BBC NI senior management team remains largely unchanged. And I mean, it was no surprise when Leo Varadkar was being interviewed the other day about the huge, almost €1 billion euro that's been committed to the North. I mean, and that includes €600 million for the A5 Northwest Transport Corridor, you know, which of course, you know, West Tyrone all there. As John Hume famously said, if you want to know the sectarian makeup in the North, look at where the motorways go to, you know. And I mean, it's now taken €500 million handout from the Irish government, which is extremely welcome, to redevelop, you know, one of the most dangerous roads in the North. €50 million towards Casement Park. I'll come back to that. You know, €10 million in what's described on the Irish government's website as a renewed visitor experience at the Battle of the Boyne site, due to reflect its unique historic significance to communities.
Why are you finding that so funny?
That's driving them completely mad.
I don't see why that's so funny.
The celebration of a Dutch homosexual Prince William of Orange with an army supplied by the French, by King Louis the 14th, which actually occurred on the 11th of July, not even the 12th. And where they had an overwhelming superiority of troops, 24,000 to a mere 12,500, you know. And that's the sort of thing that's being celebrated. And even notwithstanding that, and the Irish government's attempts to sort of reach the hand across and say, look, you know, we're going to do this also. Still, you know, it just drives them mental. They just cannot help themselves, you know. The idea that, you know, Ireland is now a very prosperous, modern sort of juggernaut it's just very difficult to bear, you know. And so Casement Park has become, like the Irish language, you know, it's become the sort of the sea border, the irrelevant sea border that all of a sudden nobody cares about anymore, you know. And when the Taoiseach, Mr. Varadkar, said on BBC to Tara Mills, look, we've given the guts of £1 billion towards projects in the North with no ulterior motive. You know what she said to him?
No.
Are you not worried what unionists might think?
But is that not reflecting that there's a people in the North who will have issues with it? Like, you know, that's like, like in the Battle of the Boyne, giving 10 million towards that.
Well, it's like saying, you know, look, you know, have you taken into account what the Ku Klux Klan?
Well, it's not a unionist. I don't think
if you were bringing in anti-racist laws. I mean, you at Windsor Park now, and I'll come back to all of the package that caused Windsor Park to be redeveloped into a state-of-the-art modern soccer stadium, which was part of the package that was supposed to do the same for Casement. They now have no Casement banners unfurled there. The DUP's North Down MLA, Stephen Dunn, said, well, we support a joint Euro 2028, but we oppose any plans to allocate additional resources to meet the GA shortfall in the Casement Park project from budgets at a time when hospitals and schools need additional unnecessary resources. And that's been echoed by, you know, the sort of the PUL, the Protestant Unionist Loyalist community. And, you know, it's only a few years ago, 2 years ago, that 55 million was allocated to the Dundonald Ice Bowl in East Belfast, which is run by the Lisburn and Castlereagh Borough Council, which is absolutely unionist dominated. Plus an additional 12 million in funding from the UK Exchequer. So £67 million to redevelop Dundonald Ice Bowl, which is an ice rink used by the Belfast Giants. And people go there and do some recreational skating, etc. And there was no issue then about hard-pressed public funds or resources. You know, there were no complaints across the community. You know, it's a very, very Protestant loyalist area. And good luck to them. There's no problem with that. The Lisburn and Castlereagh Council's chief executive, David Burns, described the investment as a landmark commitment, while the DUP mayor, Andrew Gowan, said, as the only Olympic-sized ice rink in Northern Ireland, if it was a Tiddlywick stadium in East Belfast, they would have given it the 67 million. As the only Olympic-sized ice rink in Northern Ireland, it is the training home for the Belfast Giants and provides unique facilities for elite ice skaters. Do you know many elite ice skaters there are in the North?
Not enough. Not enough is what I'm going to say.
Yes. Ulster says yes to elite ice skaters. After 37 years, he said, the building is no longer fit for purpose, and today's announcement means we will see an exciting new facility open to the public in 2026. And the East Belfast MP, Gavin Robinson, on the DUP website, the 26th of September 2023, DUP welcomed the announcement of over 60 million in public funds to redevelop Dundonald Ice Bowl.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
He said, I can't resist the natural way of development, warmly welcomed by people in East Belfast and beyond. A new facility. A new facility will ensure that the Ice Bowl will remain at the heart of leisure provision from Dundonald. And hopefully many more people will take to the ice in years to come.
Hopefully.
And yet within a few weeks, the DUP was expressing their very grave concerns about the Casement Park project. The Ulster Unionist Party said in October 2023, "We have serious concerns about this work, whether it can be completed on time to deliver a suitable stadium in Belfast. And allocation of funding during a period of severe financial hardship is a disgrace."
But I will say this,
Dion. Who needs the DUP? Who needs loyalism when you have Matt Cooper?
Oh.
Yes. Matt, friend of loyalism, he wrote in the Business Post there, "It's a hell of a big price for such little return." The DUP leader, Geoffrey Donaldson, said it's not the job or the responsibility of the Republic's government to provide financial support for the provision of public services and general Northern Ireland infrastructure. That is a matter for the UK government and must be done so in accordance with their needs base, as set out in evidence provided to the UK government. And went on to lambaste Casement Park getting additional funding. Matt, it is not unreasonable to see from where he is coming.
Well, go on. Yeah, what did he say?
This is Matt Cooper. Yeah. "It is not unreasonable to see from where he is coming." Taoiseach Leo Varadkar said, "The new ground will be the central location, not just for Antrim GA, but for the Ulster Council, one that serves 9 counties, not 6, 3 of which happen to be in the Republic. But at what price? It is not hard to see the political intent at play here." And you have this thread, this anything that's going to be.
So what was, sorry, but let's finish. What was the point? What was Matt Cooper's argument about Casement? Because there is an argument to be made that isn't driven by unionism.
It's the DUP argument. He actually quotes extensively the DUP leader, Geoffrey Donaldson, and then says it's not unreasonable to see from where he is coming. So it's the DUP argument. You know, I mean, Matt's been there many, many times. The idea that in Belfast, the second biggest city in Ireland, that, and particularly, let's look at the history of what happened with Casement. Okay, so the history was it was chronic underinvestment, and in fact, essentially zero investment in GA facilities from public funds. So we were all paying our taxes, but the GA was getting absolutely nothing in return, you know, apart from lambasted as the IRA at play, et cetera, et cetera. So what happened then was a case was taken under the Government of Ireland Act because there were thousands of soccer facilities publicly funded
But no public GA grounds, no public GA facilities, and no money devoted to that. You know, in spite of the fact that we were, at that point in time, 40-45% of the population. So the plan then was to allow, to allocate funds to make up for a lot of that, to allow Casement Park to be redeveloped. Casement Park had to be knocked down, as you know. I mean, it was a dilapidated eyesore. And at that point in time, to ensure that everything was smooth, the GAA linked up with the Ulster Rugby Football Union and the IFA to ensure that both of those also ended up with state-of-the-art stadia. And that is precisely what happened in the case of the Irish Football Association. The GAA actually sat down with them and helped them to draft their bid for the redevelopment. And so what happened was the Ravenhill ended up with a state-of-the-art small rugby stadium. Didn't have to contribute a penny themselves. All of the money was, came from public funds. Windsor Park ended up a state-of-the-art small soccer stadium. And Casement Park, which in a way is a metaphor for the neglect of my community, Casement Park has now got elephant grass growing there and has completely fallen apart. And yet, just last week, we've started the clean-up to get ready to build a new stadium. And the new stadium will be built. I don't care what Matt Cooper says. Belfast is the second city in Ireland and needs a major stadium. It'll be used for a music venue, you know, as a music venue for top bands coming from all over the world. It's going to be used for the Euros. We know now that with Charles Burns at the helm, one of the first things that's going to happen is a new initiative to open up all GAA grounds for other sports. To bring us in line, I suppose, with you know, ideas of liberalism and equality. And it will be a massive economic driver in an area that has been traditionally underprivileged. I mean, it was described by, it's been described in archives that were released this week. And I don't know if you saw, the post by Alison Morris.
No.
The sort of very well respected Northern journalist. The former head of the Northern Ireland Civil Service has had to defend remarks he made about West Belfast being a ghetto in the 80s. Comments by Sir Kenneth Bloomfield in 1987 were made in a memo to then Secretary of State Tom King amid efforts to tackle poverty, unemployment, and paramilitarism in the overwhelmingly nationalist area of West Belfast. Bloomfield said at the time, "What makes this area unique is the scale and concentration of these problems and their very close association with grave political and security difficulties, the strength of Irish Sinn Féin and their influence in the area. What do you expect out of a poverty-stricken, oppressed ghetto? The alienation of a large section of the population from the institutions of government and from normal civilised behaviour." That's how he's describing the people of West Belfast. Their alienation from normal civilised behaviour. Their ghetto mentality. This is human beings in West Belfast. Almost 500,000 of them. And the widespread sense of hopelessness and lack of faith in the government's interests in the problem. No. And so, you know, in a way, you know, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter what Matt Cooper thinks. It doesn't really matter what the Ulster Unionist Party thinks or the Democratic Unionist Party thinks. You know, the stadium is going to be built. And, I mean, I'm conscious of what our secretary of State said about it just a few months ago. He says, "Never mind. You know, don't worry about this. We'll find the money. The stadium will be built." That's the Conservative Secretary of State. And the disappointing thing, I suppose, is that we're going to just have to run the gauntlet of this, you know, loyalist sort of bombardment yet again. Instead of saying, "Look, this is brilliant. You know, Sir Geoffrey should be saying, look, this is fantastic. I'm looking forward to being there for the first game in the Euros that's played there. And in fact, I've taken up an invitation to attend the first round of the Ulster Championship and the first Ulster final in Casement Park. You know, what an occasion that will be. And instead of that, it's the usual sort of sectarian sniping and playing to their own constituency. I mean, Gregory Campbell, when he was the Minister for Sport, previously, whenever Stormont had been up and running for a while, and there was some enthusiasm for what was developing then, particularly under the guidance of Peter Robinson with the DUP, who was taking a markedly different approach, a modernist approach to things. That's what did for him in the end. You know, they got rid of him because he was far too sort of non-sectarian for their liking. But when Gregory was the Minister for Sport, I remember St Bridget's were opening our pitches up in the Malone Road. And Gregory had to come along as the Minister for Sport. And I mean, it was a very intensely awkward occasion for him. You know, we had Irish dancers, you know, we had the full thing, you had your national anthem, you have all of that. We were very, very respectful. We were delighted to see him there. I was in the sort of party that was there to meet him and couldn't have been more convivial with him and spoke to him about the significance of it, you know, and that I was delighted that he was there. And I would go to any sporting fixture with him that he ever wanted me to go to. And it was terrific to see him there and we appreciated it very much, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know. And then, you know where this all ends. Like, Gregory just can't help himself. I suppose in a way they've put themselves into a corner over the years. But he then, about September last year, was attacking Casement. You know, because it's always an easy sell to your constituents. You know, I'll have a go at Casement here. And he said that the GA will need to up its game. And the Irish government will need to pony up about 35 million if Casement Park in Belfast is going to be redeveloped. Mm. Okay, he said. And that was on RTE's News at One, because, you know, Gregory can come on to RTE whenever he wishes. As you know, he's like the Israeli ambassador or any Israeli spokesperson.
I'm sure he was invited on. He didn't issue a request.
Of course he was. You know, no doubt he was interviewed by Matt Cooper afterwards, you know. Anyway, Gregory was talking about Casement Park and he was saying, well, he say the Irish government, he says, are going to have to pony up, he says, because we are not going to have those sorts of resources. And if the GA up their game to 12 or 15 million, and if your own government can pony up another 25 to 30 million, that should release sufficient money from the Treasury in London to finish this and develop other grounds as well. And when he meant develop other grounds as well, he's talking about amateur soccer facilities in the north. I don't know if you heard Jim Shannon of the DUP at the Select Committee last week. He said that the Casement money should be used for amateur soccer clubs in the north. And now, of course, the Irish government has seen Gregory's 30 million and raised it to 50 million.
Mm. But you see, the thing is, when you talk...
And instead of him saying, well, look, fair play. Fair play,
fair
you know,
play.
It's a massive investment.
That's all he's got to say. Fair
that
play.
That means now that there's roughly 70 million between the GAA and the Irish government for a stadium that'll probably cost 145, 150 now. And yet, you know, this is now being used just like the Irish language, just as, you know. And all it does is damage relationships.
What I would say that's different about this and the Irish language, where there is no real argument at all for, you know, from the point of view of those who oppose Irish language signs, it's clearly just something that people are threatened by, But there is, when somebody like Jim Shannon says, you know, this could be used for amateur soccer clubs or whatever, that is a point of view that if it wasn't in the North, it would actually be one that people would want, would be advancing without being accused of tribalism. Because in this, in this,
that's not, well, no, correct.
Hold on,
that's,
let me finish. Hold
correct.
On a second. That, Joe,
there is
hold
no,
on a second.
There is no,
Joe, let me finish
there
my
is
point.
No, there is no fit for purpose GA stadium, Joe, in the six counties.
That's all I said. I said, I'm talking about when you talk about this money that's going there to develop Casement Park for the European Championships, there are lots of people in the South who opposed any bid to host the European Championships in 2028 because they felt Irish football wasn't something that Irish football was in a position to get involved in. And they would look at the money going, the 50 million going to Casement Park to develop it in time for the European Championships and go, is there something else that money could have gone towards? That is a different point. But what I'm saying is that the reason that these points can now be made in term, can be framed in a tribal way is because of what remain, you know, that sort of sectarian legacy that is still there. Because I think when I read people, Northern Ireland football fans saying that they would like, they would like a legacy from hosting the Euros to be something, you know, that isn't just a GAA stadium legacy. I kind of go, okay, if you remove the one fact that you've said there, where Ravenhill got developed, Windsor Park got developed, and the GAA community hasn't had any development, that's one thing, and that's clearly something that needs to be rectified. But in terms of the European Championships, I can see that point of view. Is it the case that, you know, that the GAA in the North, they want, it's like, we want our own white elephant. You've got Parky Queeve down there. Give us a white elephant. Give us a 30,000 stadium that nobody's going to ever go to.
How dare you? How dare you? I mean, the RF, the Ulster Rugby Union didn't contribute a penny towards the redevelopment of Ravenhill. Not a penny. And there wasn't a word of criticism from anyone. And there wasn't a word of criticism from anyone in my community for that. We're very supportive of what happened there. It's wonderful to see a state-of-the-art stadium there for Ulster Rugby, and it's home, you know, in a very vibrant part of leafy South Belfast. And, you know, that is not begrudged in the slightest. This is simple sectarianism, Dion. And in relation to, you know, your suggestion there that this is about concern for public funds, well, that is just complete, absolute bollocks. It's got nothing to do with that. I've already spoken to you about the 65 million going on the Dundonald ice pool. You know, and the redevelopment of Windsor Park, which was fully supported by my community and fully supported by the GAA. This is plain and simple sectarianism.
Just got time to get that result between Crusaders and Distillery. Sammy Braithwaite is there very briefly. Sammy, can you give us the result of that one?
Well, first of all, let me say this. The result of this game may be the only thing that you're interested in, but do not assume for 1 minute that it reflects all of the concerns of all of the people of Northern Ireland.
Yes, absolutely, Sammy. We're just a wee bit strapped for time. If you wouldn't mind just giving us the score.
Well, that is sort of sensationalist line of questioning that has dogged this province for decades.
Yes. Did Distillery win, Sammy?
Well, whether they won or didn't win is not the issue.
Well, actually, it is.
The people have a right to hear both sides of the story.
I don't have time, I'm afraid, Sammy. Did Crusaders win?
I am not going to be drawn into a yes or a no answer on this issue.
It was 0-0, wasn't it?
Yes.
Well, there you go. Another stalemate. That's it. We've run out of time. Don't forget to tune in to our exclusive live coverage of the thrills and spills that make up the Balmoral Festival, featuring the spectacular Egg and Spoon Steeplechase Cup in association with Moy Park Chickens. You can already feel the tension. Good night.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.